Welcome aboard, everybody, here to Fox Sports On The Road. I'm your host, Michael Cohen, and we have a terrific, terrific program for you today. We have two big guests, two big topics to discuss, and we're not going to waste much time here. We're going to go right into it. Our first topic of discussion is going to be the World Cup. Of course, unless you've been under a rock the last couple of days, last week or so, Team USA is moving into the round of 16, as this is now elimination time here in this part of the tournament, as they will take on the Netherlands at 10 o'clock this morning in what is going to be a tremendous game. And should the United States win this game against the Netherlands this morning, they will move on to the quarterfinals for the first time in a very, very, very long time. And joining us to discuss this today will be Jeff Reuter of The Athletic. After that, we are then going to go over to the Somerset Patriots. The Patriots are holding their annual toys and food drive on Saturday, December 10th. And we are going to talk to the Vice President of Public Relations, Mark Rusinoff, to get his thoughts and get you all the information you need to find out about that great event, Toys and Food Drive at the Somerset Patriots. That will take place again December 10th at the team store. So we want to make sure that you have all the information that you need to get that going. Joining us today to break this all down and to get you everything you need to know about the U.S. men's soccer team, the World Cup, is Jeff Reuter of The Athletic. Jeff, welcome aboard. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, awesome. And so before we get into talking about this matchup, just tell me a little bit more about yourself and your coverage of soccer. You know, where did this passion start for you?
Yeah, it actually started out in the bleachers, if you believe it, of a second division soccer game. So I grew up following this sport. My aunt was a goalkeeper in Minnesota at the same time that Brian Escurie was coming up through the ranks in high school. There are, you know, these family generational stories now. Now it's becoming generational, I guess, where there'd be club soccer shootouts at the end to determine the state title. And Brian Escurie would make two saves and my aunt would make one. And that's always how the game would end. It's that, you know, it's just, you know, the best goalkeeper in the world ended up beating her on the day. So I grew up with this. I watched the 99ers. Woke up in the middle of the night to watch 2002, that run to the quarterfinal, what have you. And then I, you know, was a fan of the second division Minnesota United when they're in the old NASL that the New York Cosmos used to be in. And, you know, my brother and I were in the crowd. Some guy heard us talking, asked if I wanted to hop on his podcast because he needed a stopgap host until he could find a real replacement on his show. I ended up just taking over that as the second host. I started writing about it, freelancing The Guardian, 442, ESPN, Sky Sports, and Major League Soccer's website. And then The Athletic starts covering soccer in 2018. I start as a freelancer. I get hired on full time April 2019. And now here I am in my fourth year of the staff role.
Awesome.
World Cup. It's a
awesome.
Crazy progression. It really
is. It's wild. But, you know, that's how these things go. You never know how it starts, and all of a sudden you just keep rolling, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, and there's something that's just so gratifying about the fact that it's not – I wasn't assigned this beat, right? This isn't a case where I wanted to cover the NFL, and I guess I got to cover the soccer desk, which it happens so often in this industry, unfortunately. You know, that wasn't the case whatsoever for me. So not much sleep these days. I haven't had a day off since September, but this is why we do it.
This is the youngest starting lineup that the U.S. has fielded in the World Cup and the fourth ever that they've had. Mm. What kind of advantage does that give a team like this? Because sometimes the old saying is, you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes that could be a benefit to a team that is as young and aggressive as this one.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a generation of player that grew up playing FIFA, the video game, right? They grew up watching the Champions League on all the various broadcast homes that it's had over the last 10, 15 years in the States. And so as a result, this is the stage they've been craving. They haven't been growing up saying it'd be really nice to play in front of 4,000 fans in a neutral venue in Germany against Japan, right? Which was the case in the September qualifier or in the September friendly window, which is when they looked so poor and everyone was starting to wonder, okay, is this team even going to get out of the group in the first place? Which, by the way, was always a valid question to ask, given the strength of Iran, the passion of Wales, you know, despite their lack of quality. But I think that, you know, with that youth comes one, you're fearless, as you're alluding to, right? Like it's a stage that it's not going to overwhelm you because you're not going to let it. But two, also, there are actual sporting advantages to it. U.S. men's players are usually lauded for being tireless, hardworking, grindstone runners of players, even if they're technically deficient in some cases. That's been the old stereotype since those 90s and 2000s teams, and that still holds true with this batch. But the difference is, they're much younger. They're able to regenerate. They're able to recover. You know, Christian Pulisic coming off of a pelvic contusion, Josh Sargent with an ankle. Both of them look like they might be able to play a role on, you know, in this game against Holland. Pulisic more likely than Sargent, admittedly, as of this time. But I think that you look at it overall and, you know, there are still some veterans there who are able to look and say, this is my big moment. This is the highlight of my career, like a Tim Ream figure, for example, who didn't feature in that 2014 World Cup roster, despite being a part of the program already at that point. But I think that youthfulness has really helped them take on this challenge and embrace it rather than maybe fully understand the pressure that they're under in the moment.
You know, you talk about Pulisic. I mean, I think I saw the other day he has had 5 goals since qualifying tournaments and everything else, and 22 goals in his career. And I think to myself, and look at his track record, and I see he's been with Chelsea, you know, most of his career. How did he not end up in MLS? Or he's a Pennsylvania guy. How did that happen?
He's the poster child of the new wave of American player, where for years in the 90s, you had to go to college for the most part. Yeah. There were a couple of players who would get signed at age 18, 19, like a John Harkes at Sheffield Wednesday, for example, where you would be able to make that transition young, but you had to go through college and then you'd play a pro career. Okay, fast forward to 2010. Now you're going through an MLS academy. Most players, Weston McKennie came up through FC Dallas's academy. Giovanni Reyna started in New York City FC's academy. So this is still kind of the straightforward route, but for Christian Pulisic, he was so clearly technically gifted and a very, very smart reader of a game from a very young age. He was a standout player at Youth World Cups, you know, going toe-to-toe with Brazil and faring very well. That gets you on an international radar. You also look at Germany looking to gain more of a foothold in the American market and try to cash in on what some of the, you know, the English Premier League has been able to get with their TV revenue. So they're starting to look more at American players, especially as they're getting better, especially as Jurgen Klinsmann kind of renovates the model, the focus for U.S. players and saying it's good to go abroad and test yourself. And so then you get to a point where Pulisic, 15 years old, looks like the bright future attacker of the U.S. men's national team. He's worth a gamble for Borussia Dortmund. And so he comes into that academy. His father comes with him so that he can acclimate a little bit better. And he's also a coach. So it's not just like a charitable hire for him to, you know, sweep up the benches after the game or something like that. And it makes a lot of sense. And then from there, he breaks in by 19. He's a regular at Borussia Dortmund. He's starting in Champions League games. He's one of the most dribbly boys in the world, a term that the Athletic loves to use for just players who love to dribble with the ball at their feet. And his start can really take off from there. He played some pickup tournaments for the Philadelphia Union Academy, which you can read about at the Athletic from a piece Sam Stasko put out last year. And so he has worn the Philadelphia Union jersey, actually, and played for Jim Curtin, who was coaching those youth teams at the time. But it just wasn't meant to be, given how bright his star was obviously going to shine from such a young age.
The moment where he gets the what would end up being the game-winning goal, obviously all of Twitter just exploded. Social media exploded, obviously. Yeah. And to do that while also getting injured, I think just adds to his mythos in a lot of ways. You agree?
Yeah, I would agree so. I think that in the moment, it's really unfortunate. You want a player to be able to have that knee slide in the corner like Landon Donovan did against Algeria in 2010. You want them to be able to savor the moment where they were able to put together such an impressive individual effort that helps the whole team. But I think you're right. I think that there's something quintessentially American sports about, you know, gave his body up for the rest of the game just to make sure that this team got out of the group stage. Jordan Flug game, Willis Reed walking back on in crutches, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, these moments live on in the sports consciousness longer than just about anything. Players coming through adversity, risking injury, all of that. Paul Pierce on the wheelchair is something that I've seen gift a lot since Pulisic's injury, right? So, you know, I think that it will, in a weird way, that sort of moment needed to happen for American soccer's reputation, especially on the men's side. You know, men's soccer still gets an unfair reputation for being for a bunch of pretty boys who are soft. And I don't think a lot of people, casual sports fans, realize how tough this sport is, how much grit is required to be good at this sport, how much determination, how much physical labor, how much mental focus during immense physical distress this sport requires. And it's to a point now where if you are making the same lazy jokes you're making 25 years ago, you missed the bandwagon. And so I think having a player who not just scored, but scored and left his body on the line and was able to limp through the rest of the half for tactical purposes, so Berhalter didn't have to use a substitution window in a World Cup to help his team even more. That's something that I think is going to be a statement and something that really resonated with casual American sports fans as well as the soccer crowd.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of when Derek Jeter went flying into the stands to try to get a foul ball and he smashes his head into the seats. It's like
yeah, same energy. Exactly. You want to see that because you want to believe that if you were in that situation, you would leave it all out there like a Derek Jeter, like a Willis Reed, like a Christian Pulisic. Like, everyone wants to imagine they would be that guy, and it makes it a little easier for cheer to a team when they play to a level of effort that everyone on their sofa wishes they could hit.
Greg Berhalter, the head coach, he has some Jersey roots, obviously being here Fox Sports in Jersey. Of course, Matt Turner as well, also a Jersey guy, the goalie. But Berhalter really has had an interesting career because not only has he had a lot of success here with his men's team, but he really got a start in the Netherlands. I mean, just talk a little about that and kind of the irony of all this. Here he is, now he's going to go up against the Team Netherlands here tomorrow morning, or Saturday morning.
Yeah, this is the beauty of a World Cup, right? Because these matchups, you don't have as much head-to-head history, right? So it's not like you're saying, like, okay, the Eagles are playing against the Giants. Here is decades and decades of history and miracles at the Meadowlands and all of this other stuff, right, that is baked into these matchups. Instead, what you have is small threads that are intertwined. You have Greg Berhalter starting his playing career in Holland, and so he's very used to how the Netherlands like to play, which is almost always a 4-3-3 formation, which, by the way, the U.S. men's national team also uses. The benefits of that are that you have extra control in the midfield, that your fullbacks provide the width, and that your two wingers essentially are playing more narrow and essentially are like additional strikers. So that's the advantage of it. The idea is that we'll have more players running in the center of the field. Width isn't as important because you don't score goals from wide. You score them centrally in front of the goal. So he takes some part of that Dutch ideology of every single player having to attack and defend in equal measure, regardless of where they are in the field, which has served them very well in this group stage. There's also a right back for the U.S. men's national team, Serginio Dest, who is a Dutch American. And so he chose to represent the U.S. over Holland, despite them wanting him to be part of their right backs of the future, because he thought he had more ties to the U.S., because he thought he had a better chance at minutes, whatever the case is. He made that decision for himself. So you have these sort of overlapping interests. And I think that it won't necessarily make it easier. It's not like they're able to get, like, you know, kind of a mole on the inside who's telling them what the Netherlands are going to do. But at the same point, he knows what Louis van Gaal, one of the great Dutch coaches of all time, along with Rinus Michels and Johan Cruyff, Ronald Koeman, able to kind of understand how he's going to approach this game, how he is going to look at the matchup, the areas he's going to try to exploit. So how do we counterbalance and all of this sort of stuff? It makes it for some fantastic chess for the nerds of us who are into that sort of tactical talk. But I do also think then for him, it is sort of a statement of, look, I'm not just an MLS guy. I'm not just a guy who's good for it in America. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to beat the team from the country, or beat the national team of the country, which launched my playing career 25 years ago.
Their goalie, Matt Turner, another New Jersey guy. And I know, obviously, defense and everyone else around him is certainly playing a big role in what they've been able to do here in this tournament so far. But to go up against Wales and England and Iran, I mean, you know, three really, typically really good scoring teams.
Stout
and
teams, yeah.
He's held all three of those teams to just one goal. I mean, that's an incredible...
And just a penalty, too.
Oh, I know. Yeah, exactly. Incredible.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And I think that it's something that hasn't been as discussed as I think it deserves to be, the rise of Matt Turner. And not just that he's the right man at the right moment because other goalkeepers in the U.S. men's pool fell off, like Zach Steffen, but because he earned it. And because he truly is the best men's American goalkeeper playing in any league around the world right now. And yeah, he's a backup for a Premier League team, Arsenal in London, but you know, he's getting regular Europa League starts. He's playing against top teams from across Europe right now, and he's still getting those starts, and he's trusted for a team that also is aspiring to win the Premier League this year. Against England, you know, he had to come up with a couple of really crucial saves to be able to keep them off the board once they finally got their chances going after the 60th minute, especially in the second half as the U.S.'s pressing defense gets a little tired and they shift to something a little more zonal. He embraces a lot more chances. Remember those 9-10 minutes of stoppage time against Iran and all of the shots that he was starting to face, the duress he was having, the catches he was having to make, trying to slow the game down, making sure he's not getting a yellow card for stalling too long, whatever the case is. He's been an immense figure to calm down that U.S. back line, which has rarely played together before due to a lot of injuries in their center backs going into the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And so he has been invaluable in organizing that defense and keeping everyone on the same page and ultimately keeping teams off the score sheet when the ball isn't on the penalty spot. And that's all you can ask for from a goalkeeper.
We're here with Jeff Reuter of The Athletic. What do you think about the U.S.'s chances in this tournament now? I mean, you're going now against some of the big teams now. If they get past the Netherlands, they're going to take on the winner of Argentina or Australia. What do you think about their chances to you know, make a run that would be historic, for that matter, for this program?
Yeah. You don't really have to follow soccer for more than every 4 years to realize Argentina is going to be a big, big, big favorite over Australia.
Yeah.
So I think that on the one hand, you do have a very good matchup, a matchup that I think that, look, when you finish second in the group, you're destined to finish or play in the round of 16 against a team that won their group. And in the draw each year, there are eight teams who are like one seeds, 8-2 seeds, 8-3 seeds, 8-4 seeds. So that's how the groups, in theory, every group, yeah, they're going to be harder four seeds than others. It's just like March Madness, right? But I think that ultimately you assume this is the most fair way to get balanced groups of four across eight groups going into this tournament. And for the Netherlands, they lucked out because the one seed that they got was the host nation, Qatar. So they didn't have the challenge of an England-type team, of a Belgium-type, an Argentina, one of those true world powers that's going to be favorited. Qatar was the worst team at this tournament. They looked like it. They played like it. They finished like it. So I think that you look at the test that the U.S. was able to get in the group stage with England and holding level with them, the confidence that they'll have because England is better on paper and on the field than the Netherlands have been over the last 15 years. And so I think that they'll take a lot of confidence into that game. I personally have that as a 2-1 win for the United States. I've said that on multiple platforms. I'm being consistent, I promise.
We're going to Vegas with that right now. I'm just letting you know, Atlantic City.
You might as well. I think that there's actually some solid menu. Yeah, go to Atlantic City for that for sure. I actually just started rewatching Boardwalk Empire earlier this week because I love that show and I just need to detach a little bit from the soccer for a little bit. So shout out Steve Buscemi, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think that once you get to Argentina, that's a much more difficult game because you're also coming up against the tournament favorite, one of two with Brazil. You're coming against a team that it's Lionel Messi's final World Cup, almost certainly. And so they have a lot of emotion. They overcame a really difficult start to the tournament. They had one of the biggest upsets in World Cup history suffer. They lost 2-1 to Saudi Arabia, but they came back and they beat Mexico and they beat Poland. And so they are on an absolute monsoon of confidence. If the U.S. is on a wave, they are on a completely different level of tidal wave in Argentina. So I think at that point, that would be the biggest win in U.S. men's soccer history.
Yeah.
If they could beat Argentina in a quarterfinal and get to a semifinal for the first time since 1950, we're talking about Truman and Eisenhower era, right? And exactly. That's not historically how we usually talk about soccer. We don't have to go that far back. So that would be monumental. But I think that even getting to that quarterfinal, getting past the Netherlands, which currently has a little bit of a flu bug going through their locker room. So they have some players who are feeling under the weather. They actually are going to be kind of ripe for the taking, especially as the first game of the knockouts where they haven't had additional days of rest. Personally, you know, I think that this is a realistic opportunity for the U.S. to make it to a quarterfinal for the first time in 20 years.
That would be amazing. It really would be an amazing, amazing story. Jeff, last question for you. So who do you like in this tournament? Unbiased, who do you like in this tournament? Going in, are they still in?
Yeah, I picked Argentina over England at the beginning of the tournament, and the bracket is shaped up where that could happen. So that logistically, that's nice. And I can't afford to change my picks midstream. Right? I've got to kind of, they don't give me the expert title because I changed my picks halfway through a tournament. So I've got to stick with that. But I think that from what I've seen, I feel really good about where Argentina is at right now. I feel really good about not picking France based off of how they've looked, about not picking Spain, whatever the case is. I think at this point we are on a crash course for an Argentina-Brazil final, and that would be one of my favorite games in the history of the sport.
It really would be. It really would be an incredible final. And this has been an incredible tournament so far for the United States. Jeff, if you could just let our listeners know where they could follow your work online, social media, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, much easier than when I was a freelancer to do this. You can find me on Twitter at Jeff Reuter, R-U-E-T-E-R. And everything I do is on The Athletic and its corresponding platform. So Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, whatever it is. If they tell me I'm doing it, I'm doing it. So just follow me and follow The Athletic and you'll get everything I'm working on.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. And folks, that's Jeff Reuter of The Athletic. Again, he covers the World Cup. He covers Team USA. We want to thank him all the way from St. Paul, Minnesota, to joining us today for this program to discuss the World Cup. Now we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to have Mark Rusinoff.